welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. Today we're talking books, and joining me in the studio is co-founder of Unbound Publishers, John Minchinson. On our bookshelf, we have a thriller that's as chilly as it is chilling, called The North Water. We'll discuss the work of author Alan Garner in a new anthology that pays homage to him. And since we're in London, and it would be rude not to, we'll be discussing the weather in Melissa Harrison's Rain, Four Walks in English Weather. That's all ahead on the Monocle Arts Review. Our first book today is The North Water by Ian Maguire, which tells the story of a dark confrontation between two men set aboard a 19th century whaling ship. John, welcome to the show. Introduce us to the characters that the book revolves around here.
This is, in one way, a very old-fashioned novel. It feels very much like, I think the writer Colm Tabin, who reviewed it in the New York Review of Books recently, said it was as though Conrad, Joseph Conrad, and Cormac McCarthy had basically signaled each other across a crowded room. It's on one level, it is a thriller, but it's not a thriller. It's thriller in the way that a 19th century novel like a Conrad or Moby Dick is a thriller, because it is set on board this ship, which is a whaling 19th century whaling ship. The first character you meet is a very unpleasant, psychopathic character called Henry Drax, who is a harpooner. Within a few pages, he has met, raped, and murdered a young child. He then ends up on the ship. The other character is an Irish doctor, a surgeon called Patrick Sumner, who has been in India and who has basically become an opium addict since he working in India. And all he wants to do is to go on this whaling ship as a sort of an observer, to read, to take opium, and to make watercolours. So you have already got this kind of conflict. And then there's the Captain Brownlee, the captain of the boat. The boat is a bit like Pirates of the Caribbean. It's basically all the kind of odds and sods of Victorian Britain, Victorian Hull, because that's where they leave from.
A lot of light and shade on board this ship, with perhaps a little bit too much shade.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And there's a lot of blood as well. I mean, you know, when they're not kind of flensing whales and harpooning seals and cutting them open, they're very early on in the book, again, Drax strikes again. He ill uses the cabin boy, and the cabin boy is then found dead. So he is locked in the brig. Inevitably, of course, the ship is wrecked, and Sumner and the captain find themselves in the tundra, in the Arctic somewhere, trying to survive.
So it mostly takes place on board the ship.
Yeah,
until
there's also,
a certain
and then there is,
point,
there's also passages on land as well. But the kind of the sea and the Arctic are almost so brilliantly written. I mean, this book comes with praise quotes from Hilary Mantel and Martin Amis. It is, I think, one of the most remarkable books I've read in a very long time. Just for its tautness of tone, it's a very dark, but brilliant, the descriptive writing about the Arctic, about ice, the groaning, creaking ice, the ship, you know, this idea, the kind of the smells. There's an amazing sequence where he eats a seal's eyeball and describes the sort of the salty, cold jet of crunching down on a seal's eye.
Good
There's
God.
A lot of detail in the book. And it's also a pretty, I guess, a pretty bleak book on lots of levels, but the characters are so well written. It, like I say, old-fashioned in the sense of being like a proper 19th century novel. The thing it reminded me maybe most of in recent years was Barry Unsworth's Sacred Hunger, the book about the slave ship crossing the Atlantic. But I think Maguire is remarkable. I think this is his second novel. He's a professor of English at Manchester. But this is just a remarkable dark. If you like kind of the cold, and if you like sort of, you know, if you like, as I say, Conrad or even Patrick O'Brien, but it's and Melville, but it's dark. It's even darker than
I do love
books.
The cold. That's why I moved from Australia to London. One of the reasons. But look, it does. Obviously, it is quite dark. I mean, the description you've given me now is really painting a picture all of its own.
Yeah.
But I do find that it's sometimes when we're talking about something that is so dark and brooding and scary and cold, it can sometimes be a little bit difficult to maintain the momentum all the way through an entire book. How does this play out? Did you feel as though you were really drawn in and gripped all the way through?
I think Maguire is so good at... So you could have made it a whodunit, right? So the cabin boy is found dead, and then you kind of But he doesn't play that kind of game, I guess. You pretty much know straight away that Drax is the Drax is true to type, is the murderer. So what he does is a much more interesting psychological. You've got two very different characters in Drax and Sumner. You know, one is the aesthete, the doctor, the healer, the person who is kind of losing his mind through drugs and loneliness. And then you've got one of the most kind of like Hannibal Lecter, really, kind of talk about id. You know, this is Drax is remorseless, relentless. You know, like I say, in the first few pages, he's already killed a person at the bar, you know, who insults him. So I suppose there's two visions of kind of human existence that are contesting through the book. And the way that Maguire paces the narrative, there's plenty of surprises and reveals. It's not exactly, you know, guessing to the last page, but you're still hoping. And in the end, Sumner, I mean, without giving too much of a spoiler away, you know, Sumner does escape, but he escapes in a way that makes you wonder whether it's worth escaping, because yes. He's been so brutalized.
You're really there along for the ride, not necessarily.
I think, you know, what do we read fiction for? We read fiction to go to places that we probably wouldn't want to go. I mean, this takes you, if you've ever wondered what it would be like to be on a 19th century whaling ship, this book, but more than any other than maybe the great Moby Dick itself, tells you viscerally what it was like. But it also tells you a lot about, and I mean, there's a lot about human. His characters are very, very good. Even the minor characters are really well drawn.
Well, I imagine it would be very cold on board that ship. That is The North Water by Ian Maguire, which is out now, published by Henry Holt and Co. Now, if you are not a fan of the cold, then I'm sorry to say things aren't about to get any better, I would imagine. As the cliche goes, the British love to talk about the weather, and none more so than Melissa Harrison, an author, nature writer, and photographer who has just released a new book called Rain: Four Walks in English Weather. These walks each take place in a different season, and they explore humanity's relationship with the weather. John, journeys are always good places to start in books. What sort of journey do we take on each of these expeditions? Just judging by the title, which I know you probably shouldn't do for any book, Four Walks in English Weather, but it's called Rain. Does it rain all the time?
Well, I mean, the four walks, the point, I guess, of the book is that Melissa, who is, again, a really really precise and accurate writer. She's a novelist, but she also is a wonderful nature writer. Has a great blog actually about her living in the wildlife of living in. She lives in London, but she writes about plants and animals she encounters. But this book has a very, as you say, very simple structure, which is it's a walk in each four seasons, and a walk is, I guess, a chance to reflect on numbers of things. I mean, there's a lot about her childhood in here, about being forced to walk as a child, you know, and a lot of that reminded me of the same thing, you know, going out in a cagoule, the rain pelting down on you. It is a very, very English book, I guess, from that point of view, because the whole point about, I suppose what she's trying to say is that there's beauty in rain, that if you can just overcome this idea that, you know, rain is a day spoiled, if you get out there and walk in it, the earth glistens, you know, it smells differently. She writes brilliantly. I mean, the winter walk is obviously, the landscape's very sparse and dark, but she writes brilliantly. One of the themes through the book, and she has a wonderful glossary at the end of the book, is that she's got these fabulous terms, these English dialect terms for rain. And you realise that it's one of the things that this country sort of does best. I mean, we, you know, I suppose like the, you know, the Eskimos and their legendary 100 words for snow, the different words that we have, there's some fabulous ones here that I love. This is a Scottish term called smur. A smur is a kind of, it's that rain, you know, when you go out and it doesn't appear to be raining and then 10 minutes later you're drenched to the skin. That's what smur is. Or another one which I love is cow quaker, which is a kind of a sudden and dramatic rainstorm in May after the cattle had returned to the fields from their winter quarters. And that was what a cow quaker was.
That's awfully specific.
It's incredibly specific. Or the other one was plothering, which is a northeast, is a Midlands term for a kind of heavy northeastern rain. Or the other one was raining forks, which I think sort of that idea of incredibly.
It sounds particularly nasty.
Yeah. I mean, the joy of the book is she writes about nature. She writes about our relationship with the landscape in a way using the idea of moisture, dampness. You know, the kind of great paradox is that we don't like getting wet, and yet actually to get wet, we've all been on those walks where you get wet. At some point, the rain stops, right, and you get dry again. But she's she's using it. It's a kind of brilliantly structured book from that point of view. By the end of it, bizarrely, all you want to do
is
to go for a walk in the rain. Because she, and the wonderful thing, there's this little details again throughout, there's this wonderful thing called petrichor, which is the, you must have had that, Australia you'd have it, it's been hot and then it rains and you go out and there's this extraordinary smell that's, and that is apparently all the kind of the fungi in the ground releasing their spores.
Because you can almost feel the ground steaming.
Like. And I mean, I think she writes wonderfully about that whole idea of us needing moisture, of how we manage moisture, precipitation, how we channel it, how the channeling of precipitation and rain has changed the way the landscape. She starts, the first essay starts in the fens in winter, and that's a lot to do with how do you cope. I mean, those of us who live in the country, as I do, you know, it rains for most of the winter. it all has to go somewhere, and human beings have had to figure it out. So it's a kind of a philosophical book. It's a book about childhood. It's a book about growing up and how so many of your memories as a child, and she worries that maybe kids now are not doing that because, you know, parents were, because there's so much else to do indoors, screen-based entertainment, fantastic radio shows to listen to. Why would you need to go out? When we were kids, it's true, we were, if it wasn't absolutely raining cats and dogs or forks, we were sent outside to go and play. And so I think there is a sense, sort of almost an elegiac sense in the book, that maybe we've lost our inability to deal with rain is sort of a metaphor for our inability to deal with nature generally. There's a theory, a friend of mine, Andrew Mayle from Mojo, suggested that one of the reasons these nature books have become so popular, you know, you've got Robert McFarlane, you've got Rob Count, there's a lot of people writing books about nature and landscape. So it's almost like, you know, in the monks in the Middle Ages doing the penance for the rest of the community. You know, none of us actually want to have to go and do the let's get close to nature thing. So we send these nature writers out, get them to write about it, and then
we can read
about it in the warmth of our own, warmth and dryness of our own fireside.
Well, now that you mention it, looking at the skies here in London today, it might be absolutely plothering here sometime soon. That is Rain, Four Walks in English Weather by Melissa Harrison, which is out now, published by Faber and Faber with the National Trust. John, your final choice today is a book that your publishing house, Unbound, is releasing in a couple of weeks called First Light, a celebration of Alan Garner. Before we talk about that book, tell me a little bit about Unbound. You don't really publish books in the traditional format, do you?
Well, we have the answer to that is yes and no. We're a crowdfunding platform, first and foremost. We choose the books to go into the platform. I mean, we have a lot of submissions and we pick the ones we think have got the most interest or the best chance. And we'll, on a usual month, we'll have 15 to 20 projects going up. If a book hits its target, then what makes us different from, say, Kickstarter or Indiegogo is we then go ahead and make the book. So in that sense, we edit it, design it, produce it, and then we have a partnership with Penguin Random House, sort of big trade publisher, who will make sure that it gets into all the bookshops and Amazon.
So it's almost like it's some sort of voting system.
Crowdfunding is a sense of you put an idea out there, and it's a joint venture. Where each project is like a joint venture with the author to try and find an audience, a readership for the book. And if that succeeds, then the book goes on and finds its place.
So tell us about this title that you've brought in, the one you're about to release. It's edited by Erica Wagner.
Yeah. Erica was a literary editor of The Times. It's Alan Garner's just turned 80. He's a remarkable writer. I think a lot of people who grew up in the 60s and 70s would have read his sequence of novels for children. Weird Stone of Brisingamen, The Moon of Gomrath, Elador, The Owl Service, Red Shift. So it's a curious thing. For a lot of the people who are now in their sort of middle years who are writers will have owed Alan a kind of debt of gratitude, because he wrote for children, but he never thought of himself as writing for children. His work had such, it was dark and strange. The Owl Service is a sort of a reworking of a Welsh myth from the Mabinogion And it's about dysfunctional teenagers and relationships with parents, with a kind of mythological structure behind it. It's a very, very powerful book. It was also filmed for BBC television, and a lot of people, that remains one of the kind of mythic TV series that was unforgettably sort of scary and very obviously not for young children. So Alan is sort of kind of a talismanic figure for a lot of writers, and, you know, from Neil Gaiman and Philip Pullman on one side to people like Stephen Fry on the other. So it seemed to us that there was an opportunity to get a really interesting book by asking a lot of the people who, not just writers, but archaeologists, historians, people who have the woman who runs the publicity program at Jodrell Bank Telescope, which is very near where Alan lives. So it is a remarkable reflection on one writer's work, but it's also just in their own right, these are, I think, really interesting collection of essays about landscape, time, language. It's the kind of thing that might just not happen if you were a traditional publishing house. I mean, it's not the most bowl me over straightforward commercial proposition, but again, that's sort of what we see our mission for being, finding interesting things and getting lots of great, very commercial, right, a lot of very famous people who've contributed to this collection.
Yeah, a fantastic tapestry of amazing talent contained in that book, The Wonders of Innovation and Ingenuity. That is First Light, a celebration of Alan Garner. It will be released on the 5th of May by Unbound. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, John Mitchinson. If you're looking for another bookish listen, you can tune in to Meet the Writers every weekend, this Saturday at 6 a.m. London time. Georgina Godwin will be presenting at the London Book Fair. And of course, you can catch up on the podcast over at monocle.com if you don't want to be up too early here in London. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. We will be back at the same time tomorrow for our weekly film review, but thanks as ever for listening.